I think we focus as product marketers too much on an individual thing like positioning, and we don't step back and say, hey, what is our overarching go-to-market strategy from a growth marketing perspective, from a community partnerships perspective, from a CS perspective, from a product perspective, et cetera, to say like, what is the overarching landscape and how do we fit in? I feel like a lot of us focus so much on, like you said, nailing that checklist that we kind of forget to like steer the ship.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Product Marketing Life Podcast, the show where we sit down with everyday product marketers to talk life, career, and most importantly, product marketing. If we haven't met before, my name is Colin Majak. I'm the lead PMM at Classy from GoFundMe. And in this episode, I got a chance to sit down with Jonathan Pipik. And this was a deep dive on all things startup PMM. We talked about Jonathan's experience as a startup PMM. We talked about getting the product marketing fundamentals right at a startup before you start launching ads or making a big splash in the market. And we talked about building a truly cohesive go-to-market strategy. I really love this conversation with Jonathan, and I think you will too. Enjoy the episode. Jonathan, it's really good to see you. Thanks for coming on the podcast. How are you?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Good, can't complain. It's a sunny day in winter, so things are looking good.
I have to say, your beard is looking as bountiful in this video, maybe more so than it even does on LinkedIn.
You know, I do grow it out for winter, so I guess winter technically starts this month, right? December. And I just like to, I don't know, feel cozy in the winter, so why not? Yeah.
I'm in the same boat in that I normally just have a mustache, but it feels like November rolls around and I kind of just let it rip through the holidays until I get to a point where I was complaining to my wife that I start looking like Santa. And like, that's when I decide like, all right, where the beard has to go.
Yeah, that was my issue during COVID. Cause I was like, oh, I'm not seeing anyone. Of course. Why would I shave? Why would I trim? And it just like, it was bad. Once people started asking me if I had problems with the law or anything like that, then I was like, you know, maybe I take it down a notch.
But I feel like it's kind of part of your brand is having a big, at least your personal brand is like having a beard.
Oh, for sure. It's just, I mean, what more do you want in the winter when it's, you know, negative 10 degrees out and there's snow and ice coming at you? It's like, it just keeps you warm and cozy and it's fun and less work, honestly. So
on the note of the holidays, I need to know, did you end up doing any sort of smoked meat or cookout for your Thanksgiving?
So I didn't, because we ended up getting, and sorry for folks who don't know, I'm based in the Chicago suburbs and it got really cold this week / last week. So I think the real feel was like 2 degrees or something.
Oh no.
Yeah. So this, you know,
unmanageable. Smoking
anything, cooking anything outside was not going to work. So we did Cornish hens, but we did Cornish hens, mac and cheese, red lobster biscuits, which if you haven't had, amazing. What else did we do? Broccoli salad, mac and cheese, Brussels sprouts with jam and bacon, which were really good. So yeah, it was a good time.
Lived it up. All right. I need to know, and I'm going to apologize in advance for all the vegans who might be listening. What's the, what's the preference on Cornish hens over the classic turkey?
So I, like my wife and I, neither of us like turkey. Like, don't get me wrong. If you fry it up, fine, fair enough.
It's a mid bird for sure.
Yeah. For sure. Right. So the Cornish hen is like, it's smaller, it's easier. My wife doesn't eat a ton. I'm like, you know, it just, I don't know. It felt right. So we did like three little Cornish hens. And the beauty too is like a lot of people just do chicken. The problem with chicken is like, unless you have a massive group, you're not going to make more than one chicken. Right.
Yeah.
So with Cornish hens, you can spice them differently. So one of them we spice with like my wife's boss is from South Africa, so we use the South African spice for one of the chickens. The other one we did like a classic like adobo, and then the third one we did a what did we use? Oh, a spice from the Middle East. So like we had completely different flavor profiles, which was really cool.
Do you think, I feel like there's an opportunity there to product market Cornish hens as a turkey alternative. And it's like, what is it? You're positioning on like size of group and flavor variety.
I mean, why not? Seems like a win-win. So
all right, I'm expecting a mock-up landing page come next Thanksgiving on the viability of Cornish hens versus the incumbent turkey.
That's good. I'm gonna write that down, actually, because a year is enough time. So landing page, Cornish hens. Got
it. Perfect. All right. So you and I have bantered back and forth on LinkedIn for like a year now. But I realize I have almost no idea about your background in product marketing and even prior to PMM consulting like you're doing now. So could you give me a bit of a flyover on how you sort of got into product marketing and what your career path has been since then?
Yeah, for sure. So I think the adage is true that nobody gets into product marketing on purpose, right? 100%. Especially for like, I know there are a lot of younger folks, but like for folks that are at least over 30, product marketing really wasn't a thing, right? Like unless you were at like the cutting edge of Silicon Valley. So I started off kind of in a general management track. Realized I really like from the, I think I was like 16 or 17 when I realized I wanted to do marketing. Started going to these like marketing, super nerdy by the way, but started going to these marketing competitions and started doing well. And I was like, oh, maybe I should do this. So like, did the whole
marketing competitions.
Oh yeah.
They're so, like, were you coming up with mock business ideas and marketing them? You gotta tell me more about this.
So have you ever heard of DECA?
I haven't.
I think it's like, don't quote me on this, but I think it's like Diversified Education Club of America or something like that. But
okay.
We did a bunch, again, super nerdy. We did a bunch of marketing competitions. So I want to say it was like my junior year or maybe senior year. I don't remember. But started doing these marketing competitions first at like the county level, then the state, and then nationals. And basically what happens is you go in, they give you like a prompt, like, hey, you run an automotive business. You want to expand. How do you do it? What's your marketing strategy? And you literally have like 30 minutes or whatever. Again, this was, you know, several decades ago. I don't remember, but whatever the time allotment is to figure this out. So in 30 minutes,
so you don't kind get the prompt ahead of time.
No, it's in the moment. So yeah. So I did them with a partner. You could do them solo with partners. I think there were teams as well. And you basically, and you're like wearing like formal clothing, which is like so funny when you're 17, you know, like you never wear a suit. And you go up in front of like a panel of three judges and you literally present on the spot and say like, hey, here's what I think we should do. So we did that in regional. I remember one of the categories that I was in was like automotive for some reason, even though I have like no background in cars. I love them, but I have no background. So we did that at county. We won. We did that at state. We won again. And then we went to nationals and we did not win at nationals. I don't remember what we got, but yeah, so that's kind of when I figured out marketing would probably be a good path.
So you were like, what, 17, 18, you said?
Yeah, like 16, 17, yeah.
It's in your blood at that point. Like, that's a calling.
That's okay. What I figured. I was like, you know, if I'm doing okay as a 17-year-old, I was like, once I actually know what I'm talking about, maybe I'll do, you know, like, actually better.
I think that's more of a flex than a top voice badge. But I completely interrupted you. So, okay, you did these contests. You start to discover, like, marketing is something you might be into.
Yeah, I did the whole undergrad in marketing. Jobs were really, really tough to get. I graduated in 2013. So jobs in marketing, at least in Florida, which is where I lived, like super tough job market. So I found this like general kind of role as like a role to get into. It was a rotational leadership program, like kind of just like a general management track. Wasn't marketing, you know, they promised me marketing and didn't work out. So I was like, you know what, let me just go find a marketing gig. Did some contract work, finally got to like a massive Fortune 500, and by luck, by the way, because this was back in the day when you didn't have like 600 applicants, you know, and started doing what they called like client marketing. And client marketing was essentially consulting, if you think about it. So we had clients, so like T-Mobile, Apple, Google, Samsung, so on and so forth, like Lowe's, Home Depot, et cetera, like all these big names, they were all our clients and we had to launch our product, which was an insurance or a warranty product with them. So essentially you were doing product marketing consulting for them. And we did it end to end, which is like, I guess for product marketers now is not as common. But we literally did everything from like, hey, your customer walks into your store, right? This was B2B2C. Your customer walks in your store, like, what's the brochure that they look at in the store? How do you train the sales rep in the store to talk to them? Let's say they purchase the insurance product. Okay, great. They have a claim, right? Their phone breaks and they need to replace it. Where do they go? We created the entire website experience. So we're actually writing the copy. We're putting together the flow that it should go through. When they get a replacement phone in the mail, like in a box, we actually wrote like the little card in it that said like, hey, here's your replacement phone. Here's a quick start guide, right? Like a 3-page quick start guide, or yeah. 3-panel. Like again, end to end completely. So did that for a few years. And then just kept working at, you know, mid-size companies, startups, few joint ventures, et cetera. And spent, you know, I don't know, a decade plus in B2B marketing, majority of which was in product marketing. And at the end of all that, I was like, man, this startup stuff is great. But working at one just felt like it wasn't enough. I was like, I need more. Like, you know, it's sort of like, you ever seen those videos of like little kids trying foods for, or maybe your kid, right? Like trying to food for the first time and their eyes like light up, right? Yeah. That was me with startups. But I was like, man, I need more of this. Like I need more of this. So I was like, I don't just want the burger. I want to be able to eat the burger and maybe the pizza and maybe the spaghetti all at the same time, you know? So yeah. I started the consultancy route.
Sweet. That makes a ton of sense. Even I think my experience in startups is I like how fast paced they are and I like that you can move really fast. But there is a sense where you eventually like you got to stick it out in one direction for a long time. So you almost get like that dopamine hit of build a bunch of things really fast and solve all these problems really fast is really at the first 6 months at a startup. And then you're like, all right, now I actually need to execute / maintain these things I've built and tweak and iterate. And so you're kind of getting that like rush of
all the time,
new ideas all the time.
Yeah. Like for me building from scratch, like I think there's two very distinct PMM personalities in my experience. And obviously there's a million ways to slice this, but like, you have the PMM that loves building from scratch. Like you give them a blank canvas and that like ambiguity and autonomy, like that intersection is like gold. That's where I thrive. Like I love building from 0 to 1. Same. And then you've got the PMMs who are like, hey man, like someone else needs to build this. Once it's built, I'm going to take it from 1 to 10. Right. And they love that like optimization, that tweaking, experimentation, like going, like making something that's already good. Like the analogy I always give non-product marketers is like, I'll build your house from nothing, right? Like I'll build your foundation. I'll build your walls. I'll put in your electrical, your plumbing. Like it'll be beautiful. You'll be warm, toasty, safe in there. If you want someone to come in and like remodel your bathroom or your kitchen, because you want like this fancy appliance or that one, I'm not the right marketer for you.
Yeah. You talked about your experience doing that B2B to C and even that idea of like, all right, when a customer walks into a store, what's the interaction with the sales rep? What sort of pamphlet are they going to read when they check out? Like just that whole journey. I'm curious, do you feel like that consumer facing marketing of monitoring a customer's entire journey prepared you to do that on the B2B side? Where you think about from a buyer discovering you all the way through to book a demo, taking a demo, closing, like, do you feel like that transferred?
Oh, 100%. I mean, the transfer is 100% because you're doing the same thing. It's just the audience is different. And like, obviously it's common for people to say B2B, you're still selling to people, right? You're still selling to humans. Super true. That end-to-end kind of life cycle is very similar in B2B. The difference is, sure, you have more stakeholders. Sure, the process is way longer, especially if you're dealing with enterprise. You need different types of collateral to appeal to the different buying committee members. You know, it's not really, unless you're dealing with SMBs, it's not really like one person making the buying decision, so on and so forth. But the concepts are still the same. And what's interesting is a lot of product marketers that have only worked in B2B and haven't done the entire customer journey are like, oh, well, why live here? And then this is customer success or product or some other team that takes the baton.
Yeah.
So it's always, I feel like it's made me kind of more empathetic towards other teams because I know, because I've had to play their role just at different companies.
Yeah. Okay. So you've already hinted already that you love startups. And so I want to spend some time just to dive in on kind of all things startup. And the first of which I want to talk about is channel strategy, particularly in startups. So my last role was at a startup. I'm their first product marketer. And I remember when I joined, the CEO really wanted me to jump into our LinkedIn ad strategy and like own our LinkedIn ad strategy. And my basic advice at the time was, hey, I don't think we should invest very much, if at all, into ads. And which he did not understand because he's like, we're breaking into a new market. They need to like understand us. You've recently spilled some ink on this exact topic and have argued that companies, but startups in particular, need to get the fundamentals right before spending money on ads. And so I'd love to know, like, one, like, what do you mean by that? And then two, what do you think are some of those fundamentals that need to be lined up before ads actually make sense as a channel?
Yeah. So I work with pretty much exclusively startups and scale-ups, right? So pre-seed to like Series D is probably 90% plus of my clients. And what I find, especially at the early stages from like pre-seed to maybe like Series A, Series B, is they're missing a lot of the fundamentals, but they still go and spend, you know, 120 grand a year on advertising. Then through an ad agency, they go to the ad agency at the end of the year and say, hey man, like you didn't deliver. Mm-hmm. And that agency is like, that's adorable, but you gave us nothing. You're like, your targeting was all over the place. You're like, oh yeah, I want to target IT professionals. Great. Where? Oh, in the US. Okay, cool. What job titles? Oh, it doesn't matter. IT professionals. Okay. What's your message? Oh, you know what? Let's just say something generic about IT and have them go to our website. Okay, cool. Do you have a specific landing page? No. Just our website. Okay. Anything else you can tell us about like your target audience, who you're trying to... Nothing. So like they miss all the fundamentals about ICP, personas, positioning, messaging, having like a curated customer or prospect journey, really nailing down like, what is it that they're solving? Like what problem is it that they're solving? How are they doing it differently than alternatives? So they miss all those fundamentals. So then they go spend a ton of money. Like I literally call it like lighting your money on fire, trying to reach these folks. But it's like, you don't know who you're actually trying to reach, what you're trying to offer them, or, you know, how to price and package in a way that makes sense to them. So of course, like advertising isn't going to succeed if that's all not in place. That's kind of part one. And then part two is, again, this is my very biased experience and my biased take, but startups have limited funding, right? Especially now. And if you're competing against a Fortune 500 or even like a later stage startup, you're not going to beat them on advertising. Like you're just not. Like,
no.
It doesn't matter how, like, even if you go to like those, like, what is it called? Like super long trail keywords or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, sure. You might win a battle here or there, but you're just not going to beat them. So to me, growing through advertising just doesn't really make sense anymore for really early stage startups.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense in that. If you haven't figured out what you're going to say and to whom you're going to say it, it's like using a megaphone is not terribly helpful. It's like you put it to your lips and you're like, all right, I'm going to say something really vague or say something that doesn't, or I don't know who I'm exactly talking to, or I get their attention and then I don't really know where to put them. Like it makes a lot of sense that becomes like the default setting is because people still think about marketing at its core as you just run ads. And there's not often this big picture of, well, no, marketing really encompasses like what is your pricing and your packaging and who you're for and your product strategy. Like all of that ends up coming into PMM in particular.
Yeah. I mean, the advertising should be the last piece, not the first piece. And I think 100%. A lot of startups treat it like the first piece. And it's like, well, get all the fundamentals right. Figure out who you're targeting, what you want to tell them, what you want to offer them, how you're different from the competition, how you solve their problems, and then go out and reach them. But if you don't have that in place, it's like, I don't know, that just seems like a waste of money, to be honest.
Yeah. My take too is that a lot of times there's an underutilization of organic. And it's like, because everyone's become trained to like, what is marketing? Well, marketing is SEO and running ads and making my brand pretty. Like those are the three things that people think of. And so they're just like, all right, well, I have the advertising part is running ads, where organic can be a free way to the point of startups not having a lot of money to quickly test any of that messaging you want to work out before you go putting money into it. Because if it flops in organic, it's going to flop when you put some money behind it too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and that's what we see like the well-known kind of startups and like late stage startups do, is they have one of their executives post something, it goes viral or goes like gets hundreds or thousands of likes and hundreds of comments. And that's what they end up promoting, right? Their LinkedIn app. Yeah. But yeah, to me, it just makes way more sense to go after partnerships and community, either building your own community or, you know, kind of co-opting an existing one. And then with partnership, it's like your startup, you're trying to get kind of your name out there. You're trying to get brand recognition. You're trying to get credibility, legitimacy. Use some partnerships strategically, right? Like if you're targeting, I don't know, freelancers or fractionals because you have a CRM for fractionals, great. Go partner with Fractionals United or any of the fractional groups that have tens of thousands of members rather than you trying to reach each one of them individually through an ad, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's just more efficient ways of growth.
Why do you think the partnerships channel in particular is not getting used? Because I don't see it being used either for startups. It's almost like I see partnerships happening more when you become like an enterprise product and you start like making these big, grandiose partnerships. But I feel like, you know, I don't see them on this micro level as much.
Yeah. So I think it's very industry dependent. So there's a group of startups I mentor and they're all in the fintech space. And they are 100% going through partnerships because I'd say probably, I don't know, 50% plus are going through partnerships because distribution in the fintech space is really tough. So I think my overarching kind of idea is that for industries where you can get distribution through ads, the default is go through ads. As soon as the default becomes it's not easy to reach folks through ads, then people start automatically considering partnerships. But yeah, I think there's just not enough kind of conversation, enough best practices just generally out there about partnerships from a product marketing perspective. And if you're a B2B software company and you're taking your go-to-market strategy from a product marketer or, you know, CMO, CSO, et cetera, partnerships might not necessarily be at the top of the list if that person is not really exposed to them. That's my guess, but.
Oh, that makes sense. Now, on the note kind of fundamentals, my experience is that many startup PMMs face this pressure to scale really fast. Mm-hmm. They get hired on because a CEO or a first marketer wants to see the company make like a big splash in the market, or they have this big launch that they're anticipating or a seed round, you know, whatever, something that like this big moment that is all trying to build up to. And so this idea that you're articulating of like, hey, before you go make the big splash via ads or anything else, get focused on the fundamentals kind of cuts against the grain. It cuts against particularly like what that CEO might be wanting or that first marketer who made the PMM hire. So I'd be curious, what's your experience been trying to convince leadership probably leaderships like CEOs, VPs of marketing, that it's actually worth slowing down to focus on those fundamentals, even if it means hey, you have to postpone that big splash or you slow down that big splash moment.
Yeah. So the big splash is like founders and CEOs like love that. CMOs also, CROs, et cetera. Like basically C-suite loves it, right? and investors do too, right? And I totally get it, has its place. I think when it comes too early, it's almost the equivalent of like, I don't know, going up, like being a rock star, like going up to an arena in front of like 50,000 people, being handed the mic, you have access to these 50,000 people. And you're like, I actually don't have a song prepared. And I don't know what you guys in the audience like to hear, like what kind of music you're into. And I actually don't know what music I like to sing. And I haven't figured out how much I charge you for tickets, but I'll get back to you. So yeah, so like it's that really, but seriously, it's like that super awkward, like you're part of this, like you have this opportunity to talk to folks, you're trying to make a big splash, but what is big splash about? Like it's about your product? Like, I don't know that people necessarily care about your product. They care about solving their problem. So yes, it's important to be very clear about what your product is. It's very important to make a big splash so people know that you're around, you know, brand awareness, so on and so forth. But if you do it too early, it kind of doesn't mean anything. And unfortunately, splashes like this, like it's kind of a, you get a one-time kind of pass and then it's done. Like you get your one time to shine, right? And then you don't really get a second opportunity for that product usually. So, I mean, when it comes to leaders, like I basically tell them like, look, we can light your money on fire and launch today, or we can spend some time, get the fundamentals right. And then when the spotlight shines on you, you're going to belt out the perfect lyric at the perfect time to the right audience who paid the right amount of for the tickets to see you, and everything's going to be beautiful. And usually they kind of get the metaphor and it's like, oh, I don't want to light my money on fire. And yes, I want to be ready when I go up on stage and grab the mic. And then I'm like, okay, cool. Like let's make sure your big splash, like when it does happen, it's done the right way and people remember the right thing.
Yeah. I like that, the concert analogy, because I think a lot of times, if you want to stick with that analogy, the pressure is just whatever it is, it needs to be loud.
Oh, of course.
And sometimes loud can be bad, either because it's so loud that people are annoyed, or it's confusing. Like if you hear a loud slamming sound, that's not the same as a concert. Or you go to a concert and you're not getting the song you expect. There's just so many reasons where like not having that clear experience and product offering, who you're for, all lined up before you put the megaphone behind it, is just, it's a waste of both like finances and that one shot. Like you have that one time to grab their attention, or maybe you get all this traffic to your page because you found some sort of way to do that. Like you growth marketed it somehow, and then you lose them. It's like you have a bucket with a hole in it.
Right. It's like people showed up for an Iron Maiden concert and you gave them Katy Perry and they're not happy.
Yes.
It's like, well, yeah, they're probably not going to be. And it's like, wouldn't it have been nice to target the Katy Perry fans instead of the Iron Maiden fans and get them into the right place? And
they ask for an encore. And,
yeah. Right. So,
yeah.
But yeah.
I want to keep talking fundamentals for a bit, because something I've noticed is there's a little bit of a playbook when it comes to building out product marketing, or maybe put it another way, like, when a product marketer joins a team, it's almost like they have this long list of ingredients that they feel like they need to build out product marketing. Like you need your ICP work, check. Positioning and messaging, check. You need enablement, check. Competitive, and kind of on we could go. And something you've written about is this idea that there's something to be said for going beyond just like these ingredients that you stuff into product marketing and call it like a complete program, to instead move beyond that and move to something that is really like a cohesive go-to-market. Could you say a little bit more on that and maybe where you're seeing that pop up?
Yeah, so I think product marketers in general are comprehensive and cohesive, but I think they're comprehensive and cohesive in a way that doesn't think about go-to-market more broadly. So like, correct me if you think something differently, but or let me know if you think something different, but I think most product marketers like don't just build positioning. They're like, okay, well, let's figure out how this positioning works for the sales team. Let's figure out how this impacts marketing. Let's figure out how this impacts the direction of the product. Like, I think they're comprehensive in that sense, right? Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Right. I think the piece where you miss it is like, where a lot of product marketers miss is like, they focus so much on like, let's nail this positioning. And then they're like, okay, we did the positioning. Let's nail the messaging. Okay, let's turn that message into a sales pitch. Great. Like they do it almost piece by piece, and each piece is great. But the problem is like the step back doesn't happen. So it's almost like, sure, we've made all these different parts of the recipe correctly, or we've made these different dishes, but are they cohesive? And what do they mean for our buyer? So like, it's almost the equivalent of like, I don't know, I've made my shawarma, I've made my falafel, I've made my hummus, I've made my baba ganoush, so on and so forth.
Now we're talking.
Right? Like, you know, I even have like homemade pita. Like it's warm. It's fantastic. Like, great. But these are individual dishes. So are you thinking about the timing of each one? Are you thinking about, does this mean you open a restaurant? Does this mean you open a takeaway spot? Does this mean you do catering? Are you targeting B2B, B2C, so on and so forth? And to make it like, to get away from the analogy and talk brass tacks, like I think the piece that is missing is like, how do you put it all together?
Yeah.
I think we focus as product marketers too much on an individual thing like positioning, and we don't step back and say, hey, what is our overarching go-to-market strategy from a growth marketing perspective, from a community partnerships perspective, from a CS perspective, from a product perspective, et cetera, to say like, what is the overarching landscape and how do we fit in? I feel like a lot of us focus so much on, like you said, nailing that checklist that we kind of forget to like steer the ship.
No, that makes a lot of sense to me. I guess I'm, when I hear it and you rifle through all those different examples, the thing I'm being struck by is like, oh, damn, there's a lot of work that goes into PMM. And there's a lot of individual ingredients or a lot of dishes in this meal. And so like, I start to feel like, oh, like how do you even avoid that? Cause I get if you have so many things to do, one way to talk about it, that it's very hard to even think like, all right, how do I look up and think about how they all go together? Like I have to get this positioning done and then I have to get this messaging done and this deck needs to get done. Like the sheer volume of deliverables for PMM is just so big. So I guess, what do you feel like is the antidote to that? Like, how do you actually move towards cohesion? Do you have anything like practically that you would advise on that?
Yeah. So I think if you're not in pre-seed, working with pre-seed founders kind of forces you to do this. Cause like I'll go in and talk to pre-seed founders and be like, hey, so you really need to nail your positioning messaging, your pricing packaging, so on and so forth before you spend a ton of time on advertising. And they'll look at me and be like, yeah, like I get that, but I need to make money today. Like, how do I, like the urgency is today. Like I don't have the data, nor do I have the time to do all these like checkbox marketing things. Like, what is my go-to-market strategy today? And then it's very simply becomes like, hey, we're going to do these four things. One, you're going to start content explosion. You're going to think about content everywhere you go. You're going to go on podcasts. You're going to write articles. You're going to post on LinkedIn all the time, for example, right? That's one pillar. Second pillar, you're going to identify the top 2 to 3, like really 1 to 2 communities that you want to just go all in on. You're going to go all in on that. And that's going to be one of your main marketing channels. Your third one, right? Because you don't have money at this point, you're not spending on advertising. You're going to go to these, you know, I don't know, 5 to 10 conferences or trade shows or whatever, you know, depending on the industry over the next three months or 6 months. That's going to be your second primary channel, like so on and so forth. But the point is, like, if you work with pre-seed, you become really crystal clear on what is my overarching strategy. How do I make it like super simple? And I think from a product marketing perspective, that really helps. But I think it goes back to prioritization, right? It's like, how do you not only like prioritize that list of ingredients, but then step back to figure out what is the meal we're making and how does that meal correspond to the audience we're serving? And like what's helped me a lot is talking directly to customers, which I know is a cliche kind of answer, but trying to figure out like, what is the experience that they're going for? Trying to understand the market and seeing not just the competitors, but the alternatives. Cause I think in a grand majority of industries that aren't super mature, the alternative is Excel or pen and paper or manual processes, right? If you're talking about CRMs, everyone has a CRM. Anything beyond that, like a lot of the times it's pen and paper, right? Or Excel. So trying to figure out like the broader context of the industry and then putting all that together to say, okay, generally speaking, or not generally speaking, like holistically speaking, here's kind of my go-to-market approach and what I'm going to focus on.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but one thing I'm almost hearing you say as like a subtext to all of this is not to overwork any one aspect. Meaning, I think take positioning, for example. Positioning can very easily become a 2-month-long project, 3-month-long project where you're building out this exhaustive deck and you're doing all this research, and a PMM who's passionate about that can dive really deep on that or on messaging or take any one of those ingredients. Or you can say positioning answers like 4 questions. It answers, what are you? Who are you for? Why are you different? And, you know, let's say you want to just simplify it into like very 3 simple questions, and you can knock that out in an hour and actually and move on and then say, all right, if that's how we're going to operate, what does this mean for our sales deck? What does it mean for our website? That quick. And that's not to say you should do things in an hour, but it is to say, or maybe you tell me if I'm hearing you correctly, is there something to not overthinking or overworking any one aspect, and that freeing you up to actually have a more cohesive product marketing footprint?
I think it's less about spending too much time and more about taking the upfront time to figure out what is your overall go-to-market strategy look like, which again, in my mind, starts with positioning and then plotting out kind of the over, like what you're actually doing, like what your goal is, how are you going to reach these folks, so on and so forth, before you dive into all the minutiae and spend hours or months on all the different pieces. So I think it's more of like, to use the analogy we're talking about, it's almost like plan out the 4-course meal before you start and figure out what is the goal, right? At the end of the meal, I want Colin to not just be full, but I want him to be so impressed with the meal quality that he comes back, right? Like yeah. Figure out what your goal is, like what your end goal is, design the menu, design the recipe, so on and so forth, figure out where you're going to get your ingredients, figure out where you're going to have this restaurant, what the decorations are going to be like, so on and so forth, before you start cooking. And then all the different check pieces of all the different checks of, oh, we made the ham, we made the, you know, biscuits, so on and so forth. All of that will naturally flow. So I think it's, mm-hmm. I think it's more of like do the pre-planning and then, yeah, like look, product marketers can spend enormous amount of time, on any aspect of product marketing. That's great. But at some point you gotta move. I think at the earlier stage, like, you know, pre-seed, seed, even A, like you gotta move. B and beyond, I think you have a little bit more leeway to do like the 3-month or 4-month positioning project, so on and so forth. But everything else, like you gotta move.
Yeah. That's super helpful. I think that intentional choice to not go, if you make a change here to quickly zoom out and like look at the whole menu before then you move on to like, all right, let me build this one dish and do this next dish, you know, like that constant, it almost has to be this required muscle memory where a product marketer has to operate on two planes, like both in the minutia and in the big picture. And if you over-index on either, your go-to-market's going to suffer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're not thinking through your growth marketing, your content, your partnerships, your customer success, your onboarding, et cetera, you're missing out. You're delivering a half-baked turkey. So,
a half-baked Cornish hen, if you will.
There you go.
To close, I want to do a bit of a mental exercise that I'm now realizing is very similar to the exercises you did in your youth. And I want to have you see if you can create or tell me a little bit of a go-to-market strategy on the fly. So I'll give you a prompt.
Okay.
If you had to create a go-to-market strategy for a CRM for moving companies.
Okay.
In 48 hours, you got to come up with a go-to-market strategy. You don't have a lot of cash. So you have minimal resources. What would be your top 3 priorities?
Okay, very interesting. So CRM for moving companies. I have 48 hours to create the strategy.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
I'm assuming
you got to come back to your CEO. They're like, all right, Jonathan, we brought you in. We want to know like where's your head at? What's our strategy?
Okay, got it. So the first thing I would do is research. So I would research and figure out, and sorry, we're based in the US, correct?
We'll say US-based moving companies.
Let's just assume for the sake of this that we're based in Chicago, just because it's my city, it's easier for me to, I mean, I'm in the suburbs, but close enough. Okay, cool. So first thing I would do is a ton of research. So specifically on the market, competitors and customers. So that's kind of pillar number one, or priority number one. So one, moving companies in Illinois, I happen to know this, don't ask why, are regulated. So they have to file with the, I don't remember if it's like the State Commerce Board or something like that. They have to actually tell them their prices in advance. They have to tell them like what you get for the pricing, so on and so forth. It's like super regulated. I've never experienced this before moving to Illinois. So one, I would do a ton of research, figure out what are the board, like where are they held accountable? What groups, industry groups are they part of? What CRMs are kind of like the main competitors out there? Are these folks actually using CRMs or is it mainly manual? My guess is 50% or more are manual. I've moved a few times in Chicago and it's all been very kind of non-automated, a lot of human error. So again, I would spend some time using Perplexity, Googling, ChatGPT, et cetera, to figure out who are the top competitors in the space from a CRM perspective. What organizations or groups do my customers belong to, right? In this case, moving companies, and what are the boards or agencies that regulate them? I think that's step one. Step two, or priority two, based on that, I would say, okay, great. If my main competition is actually, again, making assumptions here, if my main competition is pen and paper or Excel, right? These folks are doing things manually, number one. And number two, they're regulated by, you know, whatever department it is. And number three, they're all part of the same three kind of moving orgs or kind of industry groups. Great. I would use those industry groups as kind of my primary way of expansion or, you know, growth. I wouldn't go the advertising route. Number two, I would do all of my positioning based on assuming again that the main competition is paper and pen or Excel. I would do it all completely based on finally, you know, getting to 2024 and, like, you know, not being stuck in the land of paper and pen or Excel and pen or whatever it is. And then I would also try to reach out to the org that regulates them and see if they're willing and tell them, like, hey, totally understand you guys regulate this industry. Love that. I think that's so needed. One of the ways we help with regulation is by, you know, doing X, Y, and Z within the CRM platform, which makes sure we always have the right price, right timing, right people, so on and so forth. We're never late, so on, you know, whatever it is. Would love to kind of partner with y'all to do a webinar on that for moving companies or to do a in-person gathering or whatever it is, right? Whatever makes sense. So that'd be kind of like the second pillar. And then the third would probably be to create really short snippets, like videos of my, like articles with videos of like the top three reasons why moving companies should use these, like a CRM period. Like, I'm not even talking about why my CRM versus another, but just like, I think they're not solution aware. So I would just try to get them, or even, I think they're probably problem aware, but at least get them problem and solution aware to say, like, hey, why you should consider a CRM. Again, articles with videos, and basically use those articles and videos through the groups that we mentioned previously and through the state board to reach my target audience. And also, obviously, that would live on my LinkedIn, on my website. My sales team would use that for, you know, quick post-demo send or pre-demo send, right? SDRs could send that, so on and so forth. So that's kind of the quick and dirty go-to-market in 48 hours that I would do.
So research, position with partners.
Content.
Problem/solution awareness content.
Yep.
Brilliant. You still got it 15 years later. That's how you get first place. I will say, to peel back the curtain a little bit, my second product marketing job was at a company that built a CRM for moving companies. So nice. I have some knowledge of the space. You're very right on their trust of like moving groups and regulation, and probably, yeah, most moving companies were operating in Excel or something mm-hmm. like it. So that was brilliant. That was really, really well done. I think it's a helpful demonstration about prioritization, because you didn't get to sales decks. You didn't get to you figured out the competitors, but you didn't say like, all right, I got to do like a big competitive analysis. You just said, all right, understand the problem, find the right megaphone for the problem, and then start articulating the problem.
Right. And I think that example, I'm glad you asked that question. Like, that example explains the ingredients versus the cohesive go-to-market much better than any rambling I did. Like, that's what you're trying to get to, is like, how do I very quickly figure out what do I do in the next 90 days to get success, versus like, let me just spend like all my time. What if I told you my 1, 2, and 3 are like, one is position messaging, 2 is competitive analysis, and 3 is a sales pitch deck. When I go present to the CEO in 48 hours, he or she is going to be like, what is this? Like, this isn't a go-to-market strategy. It's just individual pieces. And I think, so again, thank you for asking that question. You said a much more, that exercise was much more eloquent than the rambling I did a few minutes ago. But like, that's what you're trying to get to is like, how do I actually make this work? How do I actually succeed with from a go-to-market perspective versus like this checklist, which just gets you nowhere.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, I feel like that was a lot of fun for me. I feel like I could do those exercises with you all afternoon. So thank you for taking the time, and I will take your Cornish hen recommendation seriously. If folks want to keep up with you and what you're up to at Blue Manta, what's the best way to do that?
For sure, LinkedIn. I post on LinkedIn like 5 times a week. And if not, my website is just bluemantaconsulting.com.
Amazing. Well, again, thank you so much, man. We'll have to chat soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Colin. Great chatting.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again, and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.